This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Sunday, March 5th, 2023. I'm Chad Pergram. Senate Judiciary Committee hearings are underway regarding fentanyl at the U.S.-Mexico border, and an opportunity presents itself for Democratic and Republican lawmakers alike to work across the aisle to address China's potential involvement in the Russian-led war on Ukraine.
I think one thing we saw in the hearing that was a big takeaway for me was how both sides really came down on China.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. As tensions escalate, lawmakers and the White House are taking certain steps against the Chinese Communist Party. Republicans and Democrats see eye to eye on some threats, but not on all.
The Democrats who voted against it said that proposal was too broad. They had concerns about free speech limitations that it could cause. And so that's why you only saw Republicans voting for it to move past committee.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Well, I'm joined now by my colleague Aisha Hosni. I report usually on the House side of the U.S. Capitol. Aisha and I cover both the House and Senate, but I usually report mostly on my live shots on the House side of Capitol Hill. Aisha joins us from the Senate side of Capitol Hill. And Aisha, you've been focusing the past few days here on fentanyl and the border. Tell us about those hearings.
That's right. Hey, Chad, good to see you. You know what? Fentanyl is one of those issues that is very bipartisan. It is understood by everyone across Congress, across different parts of government, that this is a crisis. And it is a war on drugs. And it's killing way too many people. And it's a big problem. In fact, the FBI director, Ray, told Brett Baer, this is something they take very, very seriously. So we've been seeing a lot of hearings on the border ever since the GOP took control of the House, and they've really been hitting on fentanyl hard. Tuesday was, I would say, some of the most powerful, emotional, gut-wrenching testimony I have ever heard on the Hill, Chad. You know, we often see witnesses that are very have a lot of great insight about the things that they are experts at, but to listen to a mother from Michigan who lost not one, but two sons to fentanyl poisoning, and just to witness the pain that she carries, and to watch her, you know, really lay into lawmakers, doesn't matter what party, Republican and Democrat, I mean, that was really powerful for me, and I think for everyone that was watching this hearing. You know, she lost a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old. Caleb and Kyler are their names. And I wish we could play some of her sound, because you just have to hear it and you just get a chill to your bones to really understand how bad this crisis is. But, you know, she's one of so many, unfortunately. You know, there's about 100,000 deaths a year, and it's really a big problem. So she testified Tuesday in this latest hearing. If you've been paying attention to what the Republicans are doing, they're holding these hearings sort of like investigatory, looking into the job that DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is doing. And they're really building a case, right, to perhaps launch an impeachment inquiry at some point in time. In fact, Congressman Higgins on Tuesday during this hearing basically sent a message directly to Mayorkas, you know, looked at the camera and said, I know that you're watching, or at least your attorneys are watching, and that's a good thing, because over this next year, House Republicans, this committee, we're going to lay out the case to get rid of you. So that was a pretty serious warning to Mayorkas, as the GOP, you know, really tries to put the pieces together to build that case.
You know, let me ask you about that, too. Now, obviously, it's a question as to whether or not they would have the votes to impeach, you know, narrow majority in the House Republican
right.
conference here. We don't know if Democrats would join. You know, some Republicans might say,
doubtful.
Yeah, we're not really pleased with Mayorkas. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But what legislatively might they be able to do either, A, on the border or with fentanyl? Mm-hmm. It seems like there might be a little
yeah.
more legislative opportunity with fentanyl versus actual border security, because that seems to be a
right.
little more toxic politically.
I think it's a great question, and that's always the question after these hearings that are really spicy, and you have, you know, Democrats and Republicans going at each other's throats, and people at home are left wondering what can actually be done. And I think that Steve Scalise, majority leader, said the other day, look, we're not just going to hold these hearings, we're also going to put forth bills, legislative actions that can actually address these crises. Now, you're right, on the border, not a lot of bipartisanship, because we often see the two sides blaming each other or the administrations, the previous administration, the current administration on the border crisis. And then, of course, you know, some folks believe that we don't need to focus so much on fentanyl coming in across the border as opposed to the border, what do you call it, the ports of entry, mm-hmm. and that's where we see most of the smuggling happening. So I think one thing we saw in the hearing that was a big takeaway for me was how both sides really came down on China. That's another subject that often sees bipartisanship. So we could see more legislative action when it comes to, you know, how do we deal with this fentanyl coming from China, coming through Mexico and across the border. And I know that both sides do want to see more border security when it comes to more border patrol agents, or, you know, giving them the technologies that they need to better pick the stuff up as it's coming across, because we're picking up a lot of it, but we're losing a lot of it too. You know, a lot of it's coming through that we never see.
Right. That's going to be something to watch in the appropriations process this year, to see how much
Absolutely.
Money they give to DHS or if there are restrictions on that. And as to the impeachment question here, you know, with Mayorkas, you know, that's not quite unprecedented. We've obviously seen it with federal judges. We've seen it with presidents. But the last time that they impeached a cabinet secretary was in 1876. So William Belknap, who was the Secretary of War at the time. So this would be pretty rare if it gets to that point. But as you say, it seems like Republicans are trying to build that case. And you
right.
know, there's not consistency on that side of the aisle, even how to deal with border
right.
security, which is why they're not willing to move a border security bill, frankly.
Exactly, exactly. Or an immigration bill, quite frankly. I mean, I don't know that we'll see anything in this legislative session. I know there are some people that would like to work together, or even, you know, Republicans like Tony Gonzalez who would like to work with the White House on an immigration reform package. But, you know, that's even maybe more out of sight than something on border security. But by the way, speaking of China, China has been talked about a lot in the last couple of weeks, of course, with the spy balloon, then with this report about the COVID origins being likely from leaked from a lab. We had this China committee, the new China committee, right, created by Kevin McCarthy this year, very bipartisan, held its first prime time hearing. A little bit of drama last night. Some protesters there. So what would you say? You were watching it. You were up pretty late last night. What were the big headlines, Chad?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you hit it a minute ago when you were talking about opportunity for bipartisanship. And certainly the China issue is kind of crystallized here on Capitol Hill and does present another opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to work together against a common foe. It's kind of, you know, unifying here. And so, you know, Congress has talked a lot about China. I think that, you know, there were some Democrats who might have looked askance at this committee. Viewed this mm-hmm. kind of as a reverse image of the way the Republicans viewed, most Republicans, the 1-6 committee, that this was kind of a different version of that, maybe not to that degree, but a little flavor of that here. But after what we've seen with China in just the past month, as you say, the balloon, as you say, the report about Wuhan and the potential leak maybe sparking the pandemic, Congress has gotten a little more serious about this. And now the question is, what can they do legislatively? Again, that's, you know, they can
right.
jawbone this stuff to death. And there will be other hearings in the coming days here. There's a select committee on the origins of COVID and the pandemic. And they've announced their first hearing for the 8th of March. So that's coming down the pike as well. But what do they actually do? How do you penalize China? And I interviewed the China expert, Gordon Chang, a couple of days ago. And I kept pressing him. And one of the things I was struck by in the interview with Chang was, what can Congress do? And he says, you know, the horse is kind of out of the barn on it. Anything we do, you know, there's going to be trepidation. We have to be careful about how, you know, serious we get about the Taiwan issue. We have to be, you know, very careful about what we do with sanctions or what they try to do to American companies there. The one thing that that kind of has resonated with me as somebody who's covered these types of things for a long time, and someone who covered some other things decades ago, frankly, Aisha, is how we're at this period right now in 2023 where, if you go back and look at the world in the late 80s and early 90s, and things didn't quite turn out the way we thought. You had the uprising in Tiananmen Square in 1989. You had the Berlin Wall fall in the fall of 1989. You had the, dissolving of the Soviet Union in December of 1991. And so everybody thought, okay, we're going to have, you know, we're on a road to a, you know, President Bush 41 put it, the New World Order. And this was a time we've defeated the Soviet Union. China is not quite maybe where we want, but, you know, one-fifth of the world's Coca-Cola drinkers live in China, so let's do it with business there. And one of the members last night, commented at the hearing that, hey, we thought that this free trade business was going to lead to democracy and free speech, and here we are. Right. Look what's happened with Ukraine and Russia, and look what's happening with China now. And so, you know, I think that's one of the most interesting things, the paradigm shift of the past 30 years of what the anticipation was. And I think that that's this moment of resignation that we've seen from these members where they say, we have to do something. I think probably the first thing you might see is something to help Taiwan prepare militarily. And the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, has really been driving that home of late.
Well, and in watching the hearing, you know, my takeaway from the witnesses was the sentiment, the collective sentiment across the board was better late than never, right? I mean, you're absolutely right that everybody felt like, you know what, the horse is out of the barn and we're playing catch up now, and they've already been emboldened and they're doing this and they're doing that and they have been doing it for years and we've let it go. But we can still, at this moment in time, still come together, show unity, show force, and actually start making incremental changes that would shift, you know, our stance or policy towards China. I do think it's interesting that we are now starting to send those troops to Taiwan. We still haven't quite sent them the weapons that they bought from us. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a backlog of weapons, but at least there's a little bit of a shift in our mentality and attitude. I mean, in just the last year and a half that I've been covering Capitol Hill, I have never seen the mood. And you tell me how you've felt in the last, you know, decades that you've been here. I've never seen such unity when it comes to, oh my gosh, we've got our China problem here. Let's all get together and let's figure out what we're going to do about it.
You know, I remember reading the Political Dictionary by the late, great, columnist from the New York Times, William Safire. And what he would do, there'd be these terms that you would get in Washington, you know, across the aisle. Well, what does that mean? Or inside the Beltway. And he would go through and define, it was actually a dictionary, and really go back to the etymology of things. And the one that I always remember from that, he certainly didn't coin the phrase, but he did kind of a, you know, was one of his entries in a longer dissertation in this, was the idea that foreign policy stopped at the water's edge. Now, that's an ideology and a phrase that has not been uttered as much. And again, you have to go back to that Cold War period, or maybe that immediate post-Cold War period, where, you know, that's when, you know, everybody, there were Democrats and Republicans, and they would fight like cats and dogs on the Hill. But when it came to the Soviet Union, when it came to Eastern Europe, when it came to some degree to Central America or Cuba, you know, when it came to, you know, the communist threat, everybody was unified. And, you know, because Cold War ended. We seem to have defeated the Soviet Union. American and the Western ideologies prevailed. We kind of dropped that. And that's where, you know, you got into kind of these asymmetric threats, you know, certainly posed by 9/11 and Al-Qaeda and, you know, guerrilla warfare and things like that. So everybody was not on the same page. And they're like, okay, we obviously want to win the war on terror, but what are you doing about respecting people's constitutional rights? You know, those types of debates. It wasn't all or nothing. So you're seeing paradigmatically and historically, I should, this shift back toward what Sapphire was discussing about foreign policy stopping at the water's edge.
And I think the other part of this equation, Chad, is, you know, don't forget there's got to be buy-in from the American people. You're right. Like, I mean, policy is created in Washington, but you really need the American public on your side as well, and for them to understand and take a situation like China very seriously. Now, I think the Chinese spy balloon, you know, as one congressman put it, was a Sputnik moment. I think that really woke a lot of people up. But I think the other, I'm going to take a wild guess and say, you know, when Congress really starts to tamp down on TikTok even more, that's really when you're going to get the attention of the American people, because this is something that everybody is on. I mean, my gosh,
it's universal.
Everyone who has it's universal. And when you take away something that's as powerful as an app that some people are addicted to, when you start to talk about taking that away, people start to pay attention and wonder, well, why is Congress getting involved in the apps that I have on my phone? You know,
and it also strikes me as the idea that maybe nowhere you're safe, just not with TikTok. But think about, you know, we've talked about farmland, you know, in the middle of nowhere in the Dakotas and Montana, that the Chinese have been, you know, buying up close to military installations. And there's some legislation to maybe try to look at national security concerns when that land is sold and say, is this something we should be selling to, you know, a foreign investor or to a foreign government or not? And it kind of reminds me of that scene in North by Northwest, where you have Jimmy Stewart, he's playing a character, and he's out in the middle of a field, and there's a plane flying, and it's a beautiful day, and you think there is no threat, and then all of a sudden, it's the plane that comes to get him. And it's the same thing. You're in rural Montana, you're in rural South Dakota, North Dakota, wherever, and you're like, where possibly could there be an international threat here? And it's right next door when you start getting into,
right.
I mean, look where they first saw the spy balloon, Montana.
Right.
So again,
Montana.
So this is kind of resonating with that. So, absolutely.
Absolutely. Not to mention, I mean, how many people actually know about the CCP police stations, you know, that are
in New York City,
in this country. Exactly.
And that's something I looked into the other day just to see if there had been any action by city councils, maybe with large Chinese American populations, to see if they had passed some local ordinances or something. There's nothing quite, you know, there yet. In Virginia, they have passed in the state legislature a bill to kind of clamp down on some of this foreign investment in farmlands starting next year. The governor has not yet signed it, but, you know, it's moving in that direction. You see, and that's the amazing thing, that this issue has just exploded in the past 5 or 6
Absolutely.
Weeks. It truly was a Sputnik moment. Because, again, let's look at this through the lens of history. So Sputnik was launched in the late 50s. Within a year, Congress approved legislation to create NASA because they said, we're not keeping up in outer space. Dwight Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, signed the bill for DARPA, which is the Defense Research Agency. I mean, everything started to change. And so we truly are at this Sputnik moment. And I remember my parents talking about, you know, that you could actually see the thing in rural Ohio go overhead. You know, so it's kind of the same thing. You know, as they say, Aisha, history does not repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme.
Right, exactly. Much more to come on China, I think. China will be the big story. Fentanyl, the border, will be a big story. And I think crime will be a big story in the weeks to come.
Absolutely. Well, Aisha, it's always great to talk with you. I hope we get to do
this
again
soon. You
as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chad.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The
This past week, we heard a lot about China, as we do most weeks lately, but even more than usual. The House Financial Committee advanced a number of bills aimed at pushing back against the Communist Party of China and in support of Taiwan. The House Foreign Affairs Committee also advanced a raft of bills aimed at holding China accountable, like for the Chinese spy balloon incident, as well as one that would allow the president to ban the popular social media app TikTok. The committee chairman, Republican Michael McCaul, said,
TikTok is a backdoor way that the Chinese Communist Party can get into your phone and sensitive data. So it is like putting a spy balloon in your telephone.
There was some bipartisanship. New York Democratic Congressman Gregory Meeks, the ranking member, authored the bill to hold the Chinese accountable for the spy balloon incident, but said in his opening remarks,
"We all know that the PRC is going to do. But the world needs to know what the United States will play by the rules. That will remain open to cooperation with Beijing on areas of shared interest and global concern, and that we are trying to keep channels of communications open to ensure that this competition does not slide into conflict."
After the bill to ban TikTok advanced, Meek said the Republican instinct to ban things it fears, from books to speech, appears uninhibited. As these House committees met, Department of Energy concluded the COVID virus likely did emanate from the Wuhan Virology Lab, agreeing with the FBI. Director Christopher Wray told Fox News special report anchor Brett Baer in an exclusive interview this week,
"The Chinese government, seems to me, has been doing its best to try to thwart and obfuscate the work here."
And this week, the White House said that TikTok app, whose parent company ByteDance is based in China, must be wiped from all employee phones and devices. While Democrats in the House Foreign Affairs Committee resisted an all-out ban on the app, more Democrats are starting to question the platform.
I've talked to a lot of them. In fact, I think some of them are on that Foreign Affairs Committee.
Fox Business correspondent Grady Trimble.
But they seem to have an issue with this particular bill and how it was put through the committee process. And so that's why you saw that scathing statement from Congressman Greg Meeks. He's the top Democrat on the committee. And it was voted on in committee on party lines. So it only passed because there's majority Republicans on the committee. But what that specific bill would do as it pertains to TikTok is it would give President Biden the authority to ban any Chinese controlled company that could be participating in espionage or intelligence gathering. So, of course, that pertains to TikTok. It could potentially pertain to other companies as well. The Democrats who voted against it said that proposal was too broad. They had concerns about free speech limitations that it could cause. And so that's why you only saw Republicans voting for it to move past committee. But like I said, I've talked to plenty of Democrats on the Hill who seem to be coming around to the idea of banning TikTok, especially after the spy balloon incident. And there's, of course, the House China Committee. It just seems like they're paying a little more attention to TikTok now than they had been maybe 2-3 months ago. They also have the White House urging Congress to act on TikTok, which I think will go a long way as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that briefly. So this committee vote comes as the White House has told federal agency employees and those with whom they contract that TikTok must be deleted off all phones and devices. I guess OMB wrote that this has to happen within 30 days of notice. That is quite a change after the president had reversed former President Trump's attempt at banning TikTok. That didn't succeed. But when Biden came in, he did order sort of like this broad review of the app, right, to be done by several agencies. It sounds like, to your point, like this notion of coming around to it, right, figuring out what TikTok is really doing.
Yeah, and there are a lot of Republicans especially who say, well, if it's bad enough and a big enough national security threat that it can't be on government devices, why would we allow it to be on everyone's devices who doesn't work in the government? But that's where we are now. It is important to note, though, that the Biden administration, through a particular government agency, has been negotiating with TikTok for about 2 years now. And they're trying to strike a deal, TikTok is, to obviously stay in existence in the United States. One proposal that they've really been pushing lately is to allow a third party to kind of oversee the algorithm of the app. But of course, the hardliners would say that's not enough because this is still a pipeline essentially to the Chinese Communist Party. And, you know, the only solution, according to some senators and congresspeople, the only solution is to divest the company, sell it completely, so that we know that information on Americans' phones is not going to the CCP.
Yeah, and to the political point, right, Senators Blumenthal and Moran, Democrat and Republican, they wrote that letter to Treasury's CFIUS, right, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., saying, hey, wrap this investigation up and into TikTok. And one of their requests was to impose that strict separation between the American operations of TikTok and that Chinese parent company, ByteDance. It sounds like everybody's sort of trying to figure that out, to your point, about, like, if we're going to keep TikTok, then how?
Right, because it is hugely popular in the United States and all around the world. In fact, that was TikTok's argument. We should, you know, point out that they've got skin in the game. So they're providing statements on these ban conversations. And obviously, they're not fans of an outright ban. And what they said is, look, you know, people who use TikTok have access and are sharing their values and ideas to people all around the world. And so that's why you should let us stay. The flip side of that is obviously the potential danger of that. And, you know, you mentioned sort of the growing bipartisan appetite to do something about it. It's just, what do we do? I actually spoke to Senator Angus King about this topic a couple weeks ago. He's among the senators who had, you know, we mentioned the House Foreign Affairs Committee and that specific bill that passed. That's the furthest along as far as bills go. But there are a number of them on both the Senate and House sides that would ban TikTok in some way. And Angus King, typically someone who caucuses with the Democrats, even though he's an independent, he joined forces with Marco Rubio to say that any company that is Chinese owned that could, you know, basically be providing information to the CCP, they need to divest or we need to ban it. And obviously that is targeting TikTok. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, because Republicans have been beating this drum about TikTok for years. Now we're starting to see Democrats come around to it as well. But of course, everything is political. So, you know, I'm not sure they want to hand Republicans a win on this topic.
Well, you know, this topic comes amid, like, I guess, a lot of conversation about a lot of things re-China, right? Especially after the spy balloon incident. But it seems like the House Foreign Affairs Committee, you know, they advanced other items, not just TikTok, right? They wanted to take a tougher stance on China. I know some Democrats, you know, say, and I think Gregory Meeks is the one who said this, right, that we should maintain diplomatic relations. If we end up at war, that would have been avoidable. And I'm just wondering, you know, but in his case with Meeks, his bill did advance, and that was the one that would hold China accountable for the spy balloon. So there's still a lot of pressure around other fronts.
There is. The question there is, like, what does that mean, holding them accountable?
Right.
You know, we know they did it. How are we going to hold them accountable? And you mentioned that phrase that we keep hearing. We hear it from the White House. You mentioned Meeks using it, strategic competition. Sure, we rely on China for goods, but how reliant do we want to be on them? And I think that's where the divide is, right? Republicans want to start moving away from our reliance on China and have been saying that for years, whereas I think Democrats are, like we said, coming around to it now. It's just, what does that look like? And I think the perfect example of kind of the divide is Mike Gallagher, who's the Republican chair on the House China Committee. He said, this is not a polite tennis match in the primetime hearing that they had last week or earlier this week, I should say. You know, what is a strategic competition? So we're starting to look at things, you know, like semiconductor production, farmland. China has a small amount, but over the past several years, they've been buying up more and more American farmland. So there are concerns about that, especially in rural America or in the case in in one particular piece of farmland in North Dakota.
Right.
It was right by that Air Force base. And the Air Force said, hang on a second, this is a national security threat. So there are areas of bipartisan agreement. Democrat on the House China Committee, the top Democrat is Krishnamoorthy. And he seems to be, you know, in pretty strong agreement with Gallagher on a lot of these issues. So I think there are certain actionable areas where Congress could actually do something on,
yeah, it's,
on China.
It's as if China is more unifying than anything domestically, which I guess is how things work often. But the House Financial Services Committee also, aside from foreign affairs, they passed a number of bills. One gives Treasury more power to sanction Chinese officials. Another would allow for the exclusion of China from the G20 if they were to invade Taiwan. It sounds like and that was the theme, right, in the financial committee, was this: if they invade Taiwan, that was, that kind of language was attached to a number of the bills that advanced. It does seem like Congress is, I guess, maybe it's not the elephant in the room, but it's something in the room, right, about this fear that, or this expectation that China will eventually make a move for Taiwan. And all of this is in sort of a preparation for that.
Oh, yeah. And some here on the Hill think it's a matter of if. Or rather a matter of when, not if, China invades Taiwan. And so that's sort of the backdrop to all of these conversations. And, you know, obviously they want to be prepared in the event that that happens. Some of the more hardliners on China kind of refer to it as a modern Cold War era, where there's this tension, there's these two powerful nations. And it's an unusual situation, too, because both countries rely on each other. So it has to be a delicate dance, too. And so they're trying to navigate around dealing with this. And then, of course, you have the issue of Taiwan and how much we're going to help them. Republicans have been saying for a long time now that we should be providing more military assistance, but you don't want to overstep either and give China the ability to say, well, you provoked this.
Right.
It's very tense and very complicated. And I think, you know, the president and Congress are trying to navigate all of that.
Finally, Grady, the latest news out of the Department of Energy that, in fact, COVID did likely come from a lab, because you're on the Hill and you're talking to people, you know, DOE coming out with this, you know, it does echo, of course, what we've already heard from the FBI, that this came from a lab. The FBI is finding that this came from a lab. We know other agencies have either not concluded or they think this was natural. But again, to that accountability point, Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Michael McCaul saying some people need to be held accountable for this as well. This, the COVID origins, there's talk of sanctions regarding COVID's origins. What is your sense on the Hill about, I guess, next steps? Is it just more hearings about COVID's origins in light of these sort of competing agency reports that are either inconclusive or natural or it came from a lab?
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to be for now. You know, now that Republicans have control of the House, they, you know, pretty much have carte blanche in terms of what topics they want to have hearings about. The topic of COVID and its origins was already something that they were going to probe. And so now this new report from the Department of Energy, well, gives them the opportunity to say, told you so. You know, they've been saying this for a long time, and for a long time it was taboo to even make the suggestion that COVID could have started in a lab. So they were, you know, digging into the origins of COVID already. Now they have this new report from the DOE, and it just gives them all the more reason to at least hold hearings. And then, you know, you mentioned sanctions possibly. Where do we go from here? I think the big, you know, the moral of all of this should be, we've got to do something in the event that the next pandemic happens. We have to know how the previous one started. And I think that's really something that's worthwhile to dig into. And I think that's what they're planning to do, is hold the hearings, see what comes out of them. And certainly it will, you know, these reports that have come out, and as more information comes out in hearings, people will hear other explanations for COVID that they might not have heard prior to more recently, or if they weren't listening to what the FBI had said or what Republicans have been saying about the possibility of a lab leak, or at least something that they thought was worth looking into. So, yeah, I think it'll certainly, you know, shed more light on how this all started and hopefully prevent the next one from happening. And to your point, could it lead to sanctions? I suppose it could, depending on what they find.
Fox Business correspondent Grady Trimble, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this week's Fox News Rundown from Washington. Next week, we will keep track of what's in President Biden's budget proposal and keep an eye on potential Republican presidential candidates as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis heads to Iowa. From all of us here at Fox News Radio, thanks for listening. I'm Jessica Rosenthal from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.